It's Bungie podcast time, baby.
We're the Bungie Kids with plasma pistols glowing. It's our podcast show with Brian and friends
and Frankie.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Bungie podcast. We did another one. You didn't think we were gonna, but we did. These are regular now. Get used to it. With me today in the studio are Luke Smith and a special guest, Dan Miller, also known as DMiller360, or colloquially, DMiller3City. He's one of our campaign designers. Isn't that right, Dan?
Yes, I am.
Where's Sketch?
Sketch is actually out of the office right now. He is in New York doing some press activity.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually a rare thing when either of us is in the office right now. Me and Sketch are on a constant tour. And actually, so is Luke Smith. He's been drafted into the Go Visit Random Places Brigade.
My place was way more random than where you guys get to go.
Yours is a little more rock and roll too, isn't it?
Kind of,
yeah. We'll talk about that later, I think.
I think so.
We want to take advantage of having one of the luminaries from Campaign design in the studio. So let's talk to D. Miller.
Wait a minute. Luminaries?
That's luminaries. You glow with the radioactive sheen.
Okay.
Of Wayne.
Yeah.
So what do you want to ask him?
Well, we want to ask him about Campaign, obviously. You're a campaign designer. What does that actually entail?
Campaign designer, basically, I take a couple levels from the game
right. And
make them, not my own, but like in terms of how the level plays, I'm that guy that places bad guys, jackal snipers, all your friendly foes. I kind of take the level, the concept that we have, and then we take the storyline, the grand storyline, and then I break that into my level and figure out exactly what the player is going to be doing, how he's going to go through the level, and what he's going to be, how the encounters play out, and then I place weapons, bad guys, just make sure that the flow works and it's fun.
So you just make it as hard as humanly possible? With tons of brutes everywhere?
Yes, of course. I have the second level and the last level of the game. I can say that, right?
Yeah, you can.
I can say that there's a last level of the game?
You can't say what number the last level of the game is, per se, although kids have figured it out by now anyway. So
yeah, you know,
but second level and last level. You can even say, why not, let's give the kids a treat. Why don't you give the chapter title of your second level, but not the last one?
The real name.
What? The real name. What is the name of level 2 in Halo 3?
Oh, it's called, what is it called? Crow's?
Crow's
Nest.
Crow's Nest.
DMiller forgets because they change them arbitrarily all the time, just like every name. So.
Well, every level in the game when I started has a different, like, weird name, and people still to this day refer to them as these different weird names.
Well, it's a really bad Bungie habit. Even in the code, it still has the really old name. So you have all the my favorite is, like, the Bungie guys talking about, like, level B20.
I know.
And stuff like that, and you're like, what the hell are you talking about? It's like, it's level B20. That's what the BSP is called. And you're like, oh my god. Just call it the name that the kids know it as. And stick with it. And if you can't do that, then at least reverse engineer the code so that it at least acknowledges what we finally ended up calling it.
Yeah, when I started, everybody's like talking Halo 1, B20. Oh, yeah, that's just like C40. I'm like, yeah.
You just stare blankly ahead.
C40, that was a great level.
Yeah. So
what's C40 again? And it's that? Halo 1, right? And then Halo 2 has a completely different type of naming scheme.
Absolutely.
And then Halo 3, again, has naming scheme.
We decide on these rough names for the levels really early on. Like, for the longest time, Savo Highway, which we finally revealed, was called Outskirts. And people still call it Outskirts. It's still called Outskirts in some of the text and RAM strings in the game. You know, and it's just a constant battle to try and know what people are actually talking about at any given time. Same thing is true of multiplayer.
Yeah, levels. I was just going to say, what is it? Valhalla was Riverworld?
Riverworld, yeah.
And then, but what was it? There's like a name between Riverworld and Valhalla. What was that name? I hated it.
No, it was hilarious, wasn't it? Curious Gorge?
Curious Gorge.
Yeah, which stayed in the description, I believe, right?
It is still in the description, yeah.
Horrible.
What? That's awesome.
D. Miller takes everything way too seriously. He's like, everything should be called Dragon Thunder and Death Star. And like, he wants everything to be like
hyper competitive.
What?
Hyper competitive.
Shut up. You can't talk.
Actually, the first time I played against Luke, Sorry to over talk. But first time I played against Luke in multiplayer, I was already smack talking pretty good, and he got all pissed off at me, and he trounced me pretty good.
And
but,
I beat him by like 40.
Well, what?
Oh my god! Yes.
What did you beat me?
It was a team Slayer game when I first started, and yep. you're like a really loud Halo player. Like you're loud like Joe Tung and Luke Timmons are, but like without the winning part.
Yes.
Somebody well, asked. Actually, I'm glad he's here because D. Miller is. He's doing one of his levels has a lot of the thing that I'm good at in Halo, which is the only thing I'm good at. I'll admit.
Dying?
No, we don't.
Driving, yeah. Smartass. Yeah.
Oh,
I can drive. I could drive anything. You thought I could drive a scorpion on that thing. You don't think I could drive a scorpion on?
I find it awesome. The first time you played it, like actually the first time everybody played it when we were developing, it was way too hard and.
It wasn't too hard. It was unforgivingly unfair and poorly implemented. Like the vision was there, but there were things happening on that level that literally you acknowledge shouldn't have been happening. And so you would die instantly and unavoidably in several places. And you know, it's part of the process. It's tuning that stuff out and getting to that point.
Tuning it to the fun time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now it's one of my favorite levels.
The best part about it is that like every time my name became a curse word, like Miller, like just the anger.
You're the Newman of our
I
office.
Heard it yeah. from I heard it from office from cubicles away yeah. offices cubicles away, and then like the evilest stares. Actually, I got a lot of hate mail from that level for the longest time. Mm-hmm. Yep. Serious hate mail.
Yep.
Like people just ranting, which is awesome.
Yep.
Made me feel really good.
Your levels are good now though, so you can rest easy.
And it's
that's the problem with being a designer, and probably more so with being a campaign designer. Everybody thinks they can do it, and everybody has something to say. More so than even, I complain about this in writing, everyone thinks they can write, but I think it's more so with designer, because there's this thing where, like, if you don't like something, you instantly know what your solution to it is, whether or not that's good for all players or not. So if I say, don't like the way that a brute is located, or the way that a piece of equipment is located, I just automatically say, well, it should be there. I'm right, it should be there. Right. That's going to be tough. It's going to be
that's
tough.
That's what I do with D. Miller, too. But I'm always like, hey, could you turn this regular spike rifle brute into a chieftain with invincibility?
Luke's solution to everything is just, can we have two of those? And can they be angry?
Could there be more fuel rod cannon brutes, please?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. So everybody knows how to make their own levels. And that's why I always think that, like, designer, like, campaign designer kind of gets a shaft in a lot of ways, because people do feel that they know what makes a good game. And I mean, I actually have to think that, like, don't quote me on this.
No, but, we're literally quoting you.
Yes, I know.
We're sampling you and then playing you back with complete accuracy.
To roughly 250,000 million people.
Yes, yeah, I find
at 256 kilobytes per second.
In stereo.
Which I insisted on. So, you were saying...
In this room, and actually in Bungie, it sounds bad, but, like, I don't really know, like, my skill set... is like if somebody were to list what your skill set is for and why you deserve to be a campaign designer, I don't even know if I could answer that correctly or even
handsome.
A lot of it's got to just be instinct, right? You just have to have a good instinct for what is fun, and if it isn't fun, you soon find out about it, right?
Yeah, through millions of hate mail. Yeah,
totally. You can't, and it's not like it's simply a case of iterating infinitely until it's correct.
No. So you have to be, don't you have to, you have to be somewhat close to the mark when you first start, yeah. Right? I mean, it's not, you're not, one of the things that when I was coming into Bungie that I was really excited to see was, because I didn't understand how you'd actually design a game like Halo. Like, I don't understand the process. I can play it, like Frank was saying, I can play Halo and go, oh, you know, this part is fun and this part isn't fun, but that's all subjective. But I didn't understand the process of taking a blank canvas and then essentially painting the fun onto that canvas.
Right. Actually, it's not a blank canvas, and this is my next point for D. Miller. Like all of our designers, you are somewhat at the mercy of two big-ticket items. One is the sandbox, which is the vehicles and weapons and abilities that you have at your disposal, and the other is the environment art. Now, certainly the designers have some input in how a level is mapped out and so on, but what happens typically at Bungie is that we'll create a type of map, concept artists will paint it out, it will then be built in 3D with input from everyone. But effectively, by the time D. Miller gets it, for example, he's got pretty much a complete set of geometry to work within the confines of, using the tools from the sandbox to make it fun. Am I right?
Right. So the process basically starts, like Frankie said, with a concept of the story and also some kind of art that kind of shows what they want the level to look like. And then what we do first is, well, we whiteboard it. And what that is just taking a bunch, taking a whiteboard and just kind of drawing how we think the level should go based on the story. And then from there, we also do kind of simultaneously a thing called mass out. And that takes our whiteboards and really rudimentarily builds out this environment, pretty low poly, really no textures. And then from there, we just kind of shape it like you would ceramic pottery. Start thinking, okay, and then we put guys in there and then start making these really basic encounters. And then from there, we kind of just build up and determine exactly what we want to have happen in the story. And also, there's also a lot of things like where do we want to introduce guys? If it's a first couple levels, where do we want to introduce weapons? Like, you just don't give the player all the weapons at the beginning of the game. And just a lot of other things where you have to keep in mind where does these story elements come into play and stuff like that. It's quite a process, and it's really like taking a big rock and just kind of chiseling it out bad piece by bad piece, just getting rid of those pieces until it's something that...
So you're saying that you're the Michelangelo of level design.
I think
you're
that's exactly that what he just said.
The beautiful statue's in the marble, and you're just releasing it.
I don't know if I'd say I'm Michael.
I would say D. Miller is releasing it.
Yeah. But you bring up a good point, though, is that you create these levels and with certain things in mind. So it's not your level, but I'll take Jungle as an example, which is actually Sierra 117, back to our naming mismatch convention. Sierra 117 is the training level in the game, effectively.
Right.
Teaches you how to use the basic weapons and skills in Halo. We also wanted to make it enjoyable for people who are really good at Halo and don't really need to know how to switch weapons, how to use grenades. But that's one of its purposes. So if you play that level in Legendary, you start with grenades. Normally, if you play the level on easy or medium, there's no grenades for 3/4 of the map. Maybe a half.
You don't get them until...
You don't get grenades until
the thing you do at E3.
Yeah. So, I mean, we demonstrated that at E3. But that completely changes the way the map plays. And I find myself, when I'm playing on Legendary, is like, I'm just hurling grenades the whole time. I'm hardly even shooting. So how does something as simple as that switch change one of your levels when it's implemented at a late stage? Because I know a couple of your levels have had big changes like that attached to them later on.
Yeah, you really got to look at how the level starts and what the makeup of guys are in the level. You just don't want to throw in, like, the first level of the game, you don't want to throw in, like, 30 brutes in the first encounter. So you really have to think...
Well, you do if you're Luke. He just lit up when you said that. It's like, perfect.
Yeah, I have no semblance of pacing.
Yes. You got to think, okay, player has no grenades here. The encounter should be, you know... A medium-sized encounter probably isn't the best idea. You kind of want small squads of guys because the player just can't throw grenades at that part of the level, for an example. He can't just take them all out or a good chunk of them out with one hit, so you really need to make it kind of spread them out a bit and create situations where you can take out small packs of guys and then maybe take out the final brute or whatever. And that's the big thing, is that you just got to keep in mind all the stuff that you have to work with. And Dave Canlan. And, sorry.
You have Lukey Lou's looking in our glass studio.
Yeah, you have to take in mind all of the things that you have to work with the player has, and then try to build the best, most fun encounter with that. And before I started here, there really wasn't a concept in my mind. I've worked on 5 to 6 other games. There wasn't really a concept in my mind about structuring each encounter, and you know, the gunplay in my previous games were pretty much just give the player a bunch of weapons and throw some guys in there and make them do cool things. But then Bungie, it's a completely different idea on what an encounter is, and everything is looked at really closely, and like how things work and how people work and how enemies combine different enemies, you get a different type of situation. And pacing is really important, but every encounter is scrutinized heavily here, and that's just something that I was kind of I was blown away by, and I was also really excited about.
I'm sure it is true of other developers, but maybe not in your experience. I wouldn't want to say that other developers don't do that. I'm sure they do, but in your experience, not so much.
I've done a lot of first person shooters, but not to the degree. When I worked at other games, you would have definitely a lot of the geometry in mind, but in Bungie, we have the ability to make things happen with AI, not by scripting them, but by giving them suggestions like, okay, when you kill these two grunts, make sure the brute, like, give him a new set of area to explore to try to fight you. So maybe, you know, so we have these abilities, but the cool thing is it's all very flexible, where maybe he won't do that, maybe he'll charge right at you or whatever. But we have these, we actually call them areas in the game, where they're created by placing a bunch of firing points down, and what the firing points do is just give the enemy places to shoot from. But we can control where the enemies go. So we might want to do it where you kill three grunts and two jackals will decide, oh, I want to go back. I want to get back further from the players. And there's just a lot of ways to structure encounters just with the same amount of characters. In fact, I always thought when I started here that it was kind of limiting to have like three or four main enemy characters to fight against as the Covenant. But the way that we have these set up, they actually complement each other really, really well. And I was always frustrated when I first started. I'm like, oh, well, I want to create an encounter with like seven different characters. But really, all you need, the way our AI works and the way missions are set up, like just combinations of certain characters, three grunts and a brute versus like two jackals and four grunts, like all that stuff creates completely different gameplay.
It's probably important to define the difference between what you're talking about, which is like almost scripting behaviors, and their natural AI behaviors, because all of the characters have certain ways that they're going to behave depending on their reactions to real situations. Dan's really talking about forcing situations to make a specific encounter interesting, right?
Well, I'm actually more just saying, okay, you can use your AI. I'm not touching that at all, but I want you to use your AI over here versus over here.
Right.
And the reason why that's important is because we can say, we aren't specifically saying, hey, back up. We're basically saying, hey, okay, now once this has happened, we might want to create a feeling of they're fleeing, right? But the AI still do all this stuff, but we're saying, hey, you want to go back to this point here because, you know, the player's charging through, or maybe if the player isn't charging through fast enough, come get, you know, be aggressive on him. They still do all their AI, but we're giving them suggestions on where they need to go to use that AI.
Which is one of the reasons that encounters start to feel more natural, is because you have these intense situations playing out rather than simply relying on each character's built-in set of AI responses.
Right.
But you reminded me of something pretty cool. Your second level, the Crow's Nest, has a lot of brutes in it. It's not a secret. And I think more importantly, it's the first time in the game that you really see what happens when brutes use a lot of equipment. And that, to me, was revelatory. That is what makes level 2 went from being kind of, you know, it's kind of a run-and-gun level in a lot of respects, to being this deeply interesting and surprising place to fight.
Yeah, I think that brutes using equipment for our game was like every time, like I played these encounters hundreds and hundreds of times to test them and play them. I played legendary, I played four player co-op, I've played every single type of combination, easy, normal. But like every time I play it now that they have equipment and then they use it in battle, it's amazing on what they decide to do. Like one time I was gonna just stick this guy with a brute grenade, and right before I did, like right when I threw it, he threw a bubble shield up. I don't know if he saw whatever, I don't exactly know why he decided to do it, but it like knocked off of the bubble shield and back onto me, and it was absolutely, I mean, like I was like, oh my gosh, that was amazing, because they just seem to have this ability so much more than Halo 1 or 2, where like using the equipment, they become far less predictable. I mean, even so much more, like I remember when I first started playing Halo and I thought it was kind of cool when I replayed encounters and they spawn in different spots. Yeah, that was cool, but this is absolutely completely different. Like one time you'll go in a brute encounter and like they'll throw down a regen shield and you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And that might like completely foil your ability to use a turret on them. Or they'll use a bubble shield, or they'll throw down like Certain brute chieftains have cooler equipment that just completely catch you off guard. And like every time I played an encounter, it's completely different from the previous, because partially because of that and partially because of our AI. But I just think that is like huge.
Well, I had a co-op moment. Luke was in the game, I think. We're going through the barracks in level two, and we get to an area called the head, which is military jargon for toilet, and it has showers and stuff. So you know exactly where I'm talking about, that corner.
Mm-hmm.
So I kill one of the brutes that's up in that corner successfully, but there's two or three other brutes down on the floor to the left of there, you know, as you're rounding the right corner. And I think there's a couple of jackals up top. So one of the ways to approach it in Legendary is get rid of the jackals because they're going to snipe you while you're fighting the brutes. So I go around the corner to take cover, recharge my shields. I have an energy drain. So I throw it down at the brutes. They bubble shield, and they're all protected in the bubble shield from the explosion, at least, of the energy drain, which is really weird because those two things don't cancel each other out. They have a combined effect. It drains their energy through the shield, but the explosion doesn't kill them. So they were safe. Then one of them threw down the regenerator anyway, completely canceling out the energy drain effect. So I've thrown my equipment, but there's a shield beside me. So I don't know whether to pick up the shield and use it or not at this point, because I'm running out of energy. These jackal snipers are shooting me. One of them throws down a flare, which I don't know if we've talked about that, but it's not a big deal.
It's out there.
Yeah, the flare's out there. We've certainly revealed it in all sorts of text strings.
Absolutely.
Anyway, blinds you. Blinds the player if you look directly at it. So now I'm blind, so I say, okay, guys, and I'm saying this over the microphone in co-op, I got to throw down my bubble shield because I can't see anything because he threw down a flare and they're coming to get me. So I throw down my bubble shield, so now I can see the enemy on the radar. And I'm like, well, at least I'm safe for now. I'll see if they approach me. Boom, a brute throws a radar jammer. So now I'm blind, I'm in a shield, and I can't tell if anyone's coming towards me or not. And I got killed because they threw it down, and they didn't just throw it down to confuse me. They threw it down to trick me and come and get me.
So right. the thing to stress from all of that is that doesn't happen every single time.
No, that was definitely unusual, just, I mean, but it was amazing.
But I mean, you're not going to have that same thing happen, you know, twice in a row.
Right.
That's,
in fact,
that's the best part, I think, of watching the brutes deploy equipment correctly against you. There's like no better feeling in any Halo combat in a campaign game.
Yes, there is a better feeling. And it was a small point when I just described that. Calling my buddies in co-op for backup, saying, come and help me because they're going to kill me.
The best part is like, I, as a designer, I cannot, I, we don't really have the ability to have AI throw equipment. In fact, we might have a script command, but like, I've never used it. We don't force AI to use any equipment at all. They use it when they see fit. And it, like, that's what the best part is that you're not going to get to the same situation where like, oh, okay, that guy's going to throw X and then I'm going to throw Y, because the next time he'll completely throw something else, or he won't use them at all. Or it is amazing on what the equipment has brought to the single player game.
Right. I seldom see them make mistakes. Every now and then one will throw a piece of equipment that'll bounce off something. But I've never seen them do anything stupid with, say, grav lifts. But you can force them into stupid situations with grav lifts, which is super funny. Like a berserker brute coming towards you, throwing a grav lift in front of him as he's charging.
It's
top
comedy.
Quality.
Yeah. Comedy. Well, that's the best part, too. It's like they do sometimes make mistakes, but it's like I make far more mistakes.
Way more
than
they ever do, yeah.
Yeah, and it's hilarious when they do. It's like, oh, you guys just screwed yourselves. You're dead. But the thing is, you don't feel like the game cheated itself.
No,
you just
you're
feel
like oh, thank God he threw that energy drain in the wrong place.
You feel like you got a break.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, they use a power drain on themselves because it hit something in front of them and it bounced back and it knocked their shields down. That's just awesome.
Yep. That feeling of relief when you actually get to the end of a level or to a checkpoint, you're just like, oh, my God, thank God.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the best part that you brought up is co-op. Like for me, that like we've been working really hard. Rephrase. At the beginning of the design, we in the back of our heads really wanted to do 4-player co-op. When we first started doing missions, there was some discussion, but it was kind of like, we'll make it. We'll keep our levels with that in mind, but there's no guarantee we're going to have four-player co-op. It would be awesome if we just even had four-player co-op across LAN, but like we didn't really take it seriously, but we all kept that in mind, like, okay, how would this play out with four-player? What would break? Stuff like that. And then as we got closer and closer and we started playing it, it was just like, I get to a point where I'm like, we have to ship this. But it was really hard because four-player co-op is not an easy thing to ship. And even over live is not, you know, we've never done a live co-op game. And there's a lot of technical issues on our end, on design and engineering, performance, and just a lot of like networking things that we just, I was so hoping we would be able to ship it. And it wasn't until just recently. So everybody, I see a lot of posts on forums where like, oh yeah, they had it in mind. They had like, they were knew they were going to do it for the long time, but really,
no,
it just came together.
We were saying that in various avenues of messaging, like the update, we were saying that we weren't going to ship it unless it was awesome. That was absolutely true. I mean, we've had it working for ages and ages and ages, but working well, we wouldn't have known until very recently that we could ship, you know, I don't want to say perfect because nothing's perfect, but we didn't want to say that we were going to ship it until we knew that it was at least acceptable. So
right, yeah. And I love co-op. That's like part of the reason why I came here. My first major first-person shooter co-op game was System Shock 2. And if you played that game over co-op, that game was amazing. And I just have always loved the concept of co-op. I've been more of a co-op player than I am a deathmatch player by a long shot. And this is just like, it's awesome that we were able to get this in, and it took a lot of work from a lot of people. So it's not something you take lightly, because it just something that we just had to work really hard to put together.
We had to sack up.
We had to sack up from everybody's standpoint, from design, from QA. QA has a lot more to test now. Mm-hmm. Engineering.
Frank was really instrumental.
Yeah,
instrumental in making
Frank
it happen.
Frank was instrumental.
A key member. I'm not getting like, co-op shit.
I don't know where we'd be without Frank.
that determinism code you wrote?
Yeah.
Oh, my
shaders.
God.
I don't even know what that means.
Did you check in your shaders this morning?
I turned up the co-op on level 3.
Oh, man.
But it's true to say that co-op makes the game much easier. We got a lot of questions about that. Yes, yes, yes. You play at normal difficulty levels, too easy. You play at heroic, it's really fun. I would still say it's too easy.
Yeah.
Correct way to play co-op is on legendary with some modifiers that we might talk about a little later in the podcast.
Maybe.
And but yeah, you need to, you as the player and as four players with some peer pressure, have the responsibility to make the game harder by selecting some stuff. You cannot be babied through this. Go do it. Select the right difficulty level. Don't play it through on easy and co-op and then complain to us that it was too easy. You'll be warned.
Because we'll be able to check and see when you complain.
And ban your account for being
and
like
turn off
softcore.
Your account. Yep. Lols, we only want hardcores.
But the best part about the modifiers is that it really gives you the ability to tweak your experience for your group of people that you're playing with. And it's like...
That for me is my favorite thing. Like, I have a set. Like, I have a few sets of modifiers that
I actually
like.
Agree with your set mostly.
I've made some changes. I think you'll like the new changes, though.
Really?
Yeah. The new changes, for people who are fans of Halo 1's Legendary campaign, one of the things about Legendary on Halo 1 was that it felt like resource management in a lot of ways, but not the sort of tedious resource management. You genuinely felt like each weapon the enemies dropped was important because you knew you were going to need the ammunition. And I've recently found a way to modify my experience in Halo 3.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking
about.
Anyway,
nice.
There is one question we get a lot, and I do want to clarify this in a very straightforward fashion. What happens when players get too far, and what happens when players die? So Halo works on a very big scale, so you can have a situation where somebody takes off in a Warthog and can get a mile ahead of you, which obviously doesn't mean fun. So there is warping. So if you get left behind on foot and three of your buddies tear off in a hog, which happens all the time.
All the time, yeah.
You have a choice. You can either surf on top of their hog on the hood, which we do, or you can get warped when they reach a certain distance away from you. And it just keeps the game flowing for everyone. We don't have infinite RAM. We can't load every level of Halo 3 into RAM and have everyone play through at their own pace. That's called single-player campaign. Enjoy. You can call your buddies and tell them what you're doing. But the other thing is, respawns. So when you're killed, if it is safe to respawn, that is, it's not in the heat of battle and you don't respawn in a frenetic firefight, that's when you'll respawn. Somewhere safe, usually somewhere out of the line of fire, although not always. You can still respawn in relatively dangerous places.
Sometimes your buddies are the danger when you respawn.
Yeah, I know, like being team killed when you respawn by an idiot with a rocket launcher. Yeah. Yeah, it's totally possible. But there's more to that than meets the eye. That is not your only option for respawn scenarios. And again, something we're going to talk about much, much later.
And the big thing is that with four-player co-op, we've kept that in mind when we were designing our levels. So we do have a fair amount. We have the ability to basically spawn more vehicles based on difficulty. Based on co-op. So, right. I mean, I do that in my last level where, like, I realize there's certain situations where you need to have, it would be heavily preferable to have a vehicle. So I, based on co-op, spawn in more vehicles so that players can stick together. And I know that I'm pretty sure we do that in other places throughout the game.
Yeah, I can think of a bunch of places where it happens.
That reminds me of the Eurogamer article where the writer was complaining that there were long sections where you were driving and there were no encounters, and it's like, well, it's our driving training levels. The first level we actually have vehicles and we want you to go tooling around in a hog. Right. So we deliberately insert huge long pathways with jumps and berms and
high impact opportunities.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I wish I'd been able to explain that to him personally, but it's fine. He's
listening right now, I guarantee it.
Plus, in Halo 1, actually, that was one of my favorite moments when the first time I got a Warthog, like, they dropped it down, and I just got to drive around and just
doing donuts.
There's no bad guys. It was just kind of just driving around, and I loved that because I felt like a breath of fresh air from that. It just seemed like, okay, I could just drive around, kind of figure out how this thing works, because this is the first time I ever used a Warthog in the game.
Right.
And maybe it might not be the first time for a lot of people, but I think a lot of people enjoy just driving around. You're not going to be driving around for forever, but it's kind of nice to have that ability to figure out how this thing works and get a good feel for it, because you'll need it later.
Stop and smell the roses and look around at the skybox.
We gave you this world for.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Definitely.
But actually, that's another good point, is we have to make a game that appeals to people who are, I mean, level 35s in multiplayer in Halo 2 and people who've never picked up Halo before. So we do that with the plot. We get you up to speed on the plot. But we also have to remember that we have to do it in the gameplay. Not everyone is an MLG pro. And not everyone's familiar with the way a game works. I've seen a statistic that says that something like half the people with 360s have never played a Halo. Something like that. And so we certainly have to keep those people in mind. And we, of course, want to attract new customers. So we have to make the game approachable for them.
But the cool thing is we're not watering the game down whatsoever for people who are really good. Especially if you use some of the abilities that we were talking about earlier. But at the same time, it's kind of a good balance where... Like I've played Halo for a long time, and I still really enjoy getting in a Warthog and just tootling around, exploring little parts of the level, and then just moving on and fighting stuff. I think it's a perfect balance.
And there's a lot of opportunities for that throughout the game, I think. Not just Warthogs either, other things.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Other vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Vehicles
and other things.
Are good.
Yes.
What else do we got for D. Miller? I'm just kind of basking in this glow.
It's nice to be able to finally relax and talk about game features openly without any caveats. And when does the game ship? What are we, in August now? It's like
7 weeks away or something.
Wow.
You know, 6 weeks maybe by the time this comes out. Who knows?
It's so awesome walking around, because really my bug count is super low now. I can do that now. And just hearing people giggle and people go, sorry, I didn't mean to break the microphone, but freak out about when they're playing four-player co-op or doing multiplayer, and like it seems everything has come together really, really well. I mean, there's definitely some issues that we're still working on, but for the most part, it's really. I mean, I'm
such
so excited.
A nice atmosphere here right now. All of the major hurdles, apart from the brute business yesterday, all of the major
the
hurdles.
Brute zone.
The brute appendage. All of the major hurdles have been solved, like four-player co-op and all that stuff. And right now, what's left in development literally is everyone on staff who isn't working on some critical component. And that's a lot of people, maybe 100 people right now are down there and at home playing the game on Xbox Live, playing multiplayer, playing campaign, playing co-op, and helping the designers and the engineers achieve the last minute polish items. Like, I looked at my bug count rate, I'm down to zero, although one of my bugs got no fix, but I'll tell you what that is after the game ships. It's not a big deal. But the atmosphere is great, and you're right, you'll see tables full of disciplines, like artists, for example, all playing co-op together, and just, it's the first time that they've been able to go just immerse themselves in it and enjoy it as a game and not as a job, and it's really fun to watch that.
I think it's just really cool, I mean, to see that happen across, like, I think co-op has opened up the game for a lot of more people now, because I think a lot of people are kind of, you know, kind of, I don't know.
So let's just use the artists as an example of where being on their own is frightening for them.
No. Like, I mean, okay, you're right. But, like,
Jungle's too hard.
It's too tough.
But no, I just see, it's cool to see people who might not, like, just go play the game all the time, because we look at this thing all day long. To actually come together and, like, just get a kick out of playing co-op.
Right.
I think that's just opening up huge here.
Yeah.
The other big part of the game that's still being worked on is music and sound effects.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
The reader questions, but...
Oh.
Speaking of reader questions...
I can't give an example?
No, because we need to answer a reader's question. You're going to ruin it with your perfectly valid answer.
No. I was going to give an anecdote.
Oh, well, given
the first time I saw the intro last night with music, I almost wept. Like, seriously, I got a little wet on
because,
the eyes.
And I've always understood this, but it's still hard to deal with, which is you watch that intro, you're like, that's really cool, but it's missing something.
Yes.
And you say to yourself on an intellectual level, oh my God, this is going to be 20 times better when the music's attached. But since it's not attached, it's 20 times worse, right? And you know it. Right. Intellectually, but you can't.
It's funny to see. Like, I tell Marty this because I kiss his butt all the time. But
yeah, he needs his ego stroke.
Yeah, because you know he's so meek. But I tell him, like, I bothered him since I think 6 months ago now. Where gotta have music in my levels, Marty. My levels aren't a level without. It's amazing what music brings to the game. It takes a tech demo and actually brings it. You know, tech demo meaning, you know, everything's working, everything's there, but once you add music to it, it is amazing on what it does to the game. It actually makes it feel like a game. And without music, it, once again, kissing butt, but like, once you see, when you play a game, a level for so long without music, and then when you add it, it's like a completely different experience. And music's being added to the cinematics and stuff right now, so.
I think on that note, we will take a quick break and come back with a little bit more from D. Miller.
And a little bit more music talk.
A little bit more music talk, and a little bit from the community, and a little bit on trips. We'll be right back.
Brought to you by Flaming Ninjas, the Bungie Mail Sack.
So, welcome back to the Bungie Podcast. This is podcast number what? I mean, so many
it's
now.
Five or six.
Three. Wow. It's not three. We did that, the one initial best podcast ever, and then we had a brief hiatus, and then a couple more. I think it's five, actually.
I think it's five, you're right.
So, welcome back to the podcast. With us in the studio, Luke Smith, D. Miller 360, and myself, Frank O'Connor. So, we were chatting about co-op and we were chatting about campaign. And Dan, you'd brought us on to music, but Luke has an interesting musical anecdote himself, don't you?
Yeah, we were talking at the top of the show about different trips. And the trip that I was deployed on involved going down to music via the Project Evolution Tour, I believe is what it's called. Right. And that's a tour that Halo 3 is a sponsor for. And it's Linkin Park and My Chemical Romance and then a bunch of other bands. It's like an outdoor festival. It's a day-long event every time it happens. So the catch, I guess, is that for five shows on this tour, there are locally sponsored contests. And the contest winners get to, one, meet the bands, and two, and, you know, for some, maybe more interestingly, definitely probably for people listening to the show more interestingly, they get to come and play Halo 3. And so we set up 10 stations at the concert venue and for 4 hours let people play multiplayer, a bunch of stuff that they've seen but definitely not played. They got to play Epitaph and Shrine or Sand Trap people got to play, and then also Last Resort.
Right. Sand Trap being the new name for Shrine, just to clarify. Now, Linkin Park, true or false, big Halo fans?
When I was going, I didn't necessarily believe that they were big Halo fans, but they're huge Halo fans. Like, so big that these guys walk in, you know, to play for a half hour, 45 minutes, and there's a bunch of, you know, teenage, probably 14 or 15, 16-year-old girls sitting around waiting for them to get there. And the girls, you hear, like, this, you know, swelling of, in the heaving of breasts, and girls are just giggling. And the Linkin Park guys hear all this, they sort of grin, and then beeline directly to Halo 3. They ignore the girls, sit down, one guy stops, finds the only guy there in the bungee t-shirt, which was me, like, gives me a gross man hug,
right,
and is like, "I love you, man," and then sits down and plays. And they just, and they're like, "We're only signing autographs in between games."
I don't know whether to be proud or ashamed of the fact that our game can make a rock star ignore heaving breastises.
Yeah. So it was
there's a lot of man boobs in that audience too. It's a pretty emo crowd, right?
I don't know. The people who won the contest weren't particularly emo.
No.
Not really. No. A lot of people at the concert though.
Oh yeah, of course.
I mean, it was,
and moobs galore, let's be honest. So the what? But on that note, another apocryphal tale I heard was that Julia Roberts was a huge Halo fan, and it just sounded like PR fluff. But when I was in Amsterdam, they played the video of Julia Roberts professing her adoration for Halo, and it was hilarious. Like, apparently the reason we never show that is because we don't have rights to whatever TV show it's from. But we watched it, and like, she's gushing, and you can tell, like, it's not some, you know, her publicist said, "Oh, say you like Halo, because that's cool." Like, you can tell she had an Xbox, and she played a lot of Halo, and she probably plays MLG Rules BR Starts. That's what I'm talking about. Julia, go for it.
BXR, baby. So one last...
No, BXR, that's
BS. Oh,
that's
I'm sorry. BS. Oh, sorry, I meant... Yeah, no, exactly. No, I'm talking... Never mind.
Yeah, you're talking H2. That's, yeah, exactly. We understand that it exists.
Yeah, you know who BXR is? Paris Hilton. You don't want to go there. So, what? She might. She's a child of privilege. She probably got like elite schooling in BXR techniques.
She can afford to hire the MLG kids.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Tutor her.
Yeah, in jail. She's probably got a tattoo.
She's free. Freed. She's out.
Is she?
She's running around. I read on The Superficial.
Well, that's fair.
That's good. She got a
good.
Nice shout out there to The Superficial.
Project Evolution, you haven't missed all the chances to check out the game. There's three more dates that Bungie and Halo are going to be at. And they're in Boston on the 24th of this month, in New York on the 29th, and in September on the 1st.
Well, where's the
Chicago,
September? Chicago, Chi-Town?
Yeah.
The home of Bungie in the launch month of Halo 3? That'll be a good one.
Storied and legendary.
All you multiplayer community guys gonna go all the place. Single-player campaign guys sit at home.
I'm pretty sure that there's I'm pretty sure there'll be single-player guys traveling this fall.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe...
There are opportunities, and you have been offered them, so quit your whining.
I've
got to go home to hang out with my family. I just want to hang out with rock bands and find those heaving breastises. Actually, that's pretty reasonable.
You said that you would have wanted to go to the Project Evolution were you not stationed in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I probably would have gone, but I'm off to Australia next week. It's going to be good.
With Lars Bakken.
With Lars Bakken. Rock and roll, Satan.
Rock and Bakken.
What are you guys doing down in Australia?
We are doing a similar press event to the one that we did in Amsterdam, but for what's called the APAC press, which is Australian Pacific Region press, down in Australia. So we'll have some Asian press there, but mostly like New Zealand, Australia, and, you know, that sort of thing. And now we're going to be doing some event in Sydney. I don't have all the details in front of me, but it should be... some single-player demo, a little multiplayer session. Should be good times.
A little random APAC note. I got a message on BNet this week from a guy who lives in New Zealand.
Right.
And he tried to pre-order a copy of Legendary. And he said that New Zealand's allocation for Legendary was only 500 copies, and they were all sold out.
Oh,
and he wanted to see if you could get more sent to New Zealand. He messaged me to ask you.
Frankie, you would know, right?
I mean, I literally can and will send an email right now, but it's a little late. They literally tore down that factory after they finished making the helmets.
You're not shipping yourself these copies out?
No.
To New Zealand?
I do not run the mailroom here. You'll be surprised to know.
Everything else, though, you do.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah, so the Legendary Edition that's the funny thing is that, like, we had the limited edition of Halo 2, the Metal Box Edition, and it was limited, but, like, it was a lot of, we knew there was a big demand, so we made a lot of them. But the legendary edition will be in short supply, I think. The more and more I see mails like that from people, so
I can't even get one.
Yep, and they announced the price for the Halo 3 Special Edition console, $399. But that does sort of incorporate a $50 price cut on the normal premium edition, the normal Pro SKU. What do we call it?
I think it's the premium to consumers.
And so that's a 20 gig hard drive, console, wired headset, some stuff on the hard drive, and a play and charge kit, and HDMI. So it ends up actually being like, in theory, a $50 premium, but you can't actually get the HDMI version. You know, there's all this stuff. But honestly, like, it's not for kids who don't have a 360 period, who don't care about Halo. It's for people who really care about Halo and either haven't got a 360 yet or are so insane about it that they're prepared to either trade in or get another 360.
They want one for the Papa Room.
Yeah, and they want, you know, and maybe they want the Halo one. And I keep seeing the photographs of the Halo 360, and they don't do it justice. I was talking to Butcher about this morning. The picture makes it look gaudier than it really is. And the problem is that the plastic has this, like, weird sort of semi-light absorbing quality in real life that it doesn't in photographs. And unfortunately, the only way to see what it really looks like is to see it in real life. So I hope they get some in stores, because it's actually very subtle and cool in real life.
Can't wait to see it.
Actually, one on my desk. It's right over there.
You can look through the studio window. See,
there. We're pointing at one right now.
Frankie always gets the cool stuff.
Yeah, I know.
You guys get to do all the cool stuff.
That's true.
Lucky.
I'm going to see Julia Roberts with or without that restraining order.
Name dropping.
She has like a whole litter of kids now.
Does she?
Yeah, she
didn't. She marry a regular dude, like a cameraman?
I think
or
she.
Something?
Yeah, yeah. I thought she just married key grip.
She's suddenly getting mad props in my book.
Yeah. So we got a ton of questions from the dudes this week. Some of them are definitely worth taking a look at.
Yeah, let's do it.
Ready, Frank?
Yeah, let's do it.
D Miller will be able to jump in too. Hey guys, will there be clan functionality in Halo 3?
No, there will not be clan functionality in Halo 3. Actually, what we did in Halo 2 is kind of a cheat. Our clan system was really just a second friends list. And it was kind of clunky and kind of borked. And if you think about it, it didn't really give you any real functionality other than a second friends list. I mean, that's because that's what it was. It was useful, though. I'm not going to deny that it was useful. We can't do that on Xbox Live for a variety of reasons, not least of which is that they realized we cheated last time. But the main reasons are just ones of, like, management and UI and stuff like that. But I have heard rumors that there might be a clan.